Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Dual Screens Crossplay podcast. That's right. We are no longer the Gamescast because that wasn't even supposed to be the name of the show. That was supposed to be the name for the pilot that wound up never getting changed. But now we are the Dual Screens Crossplay podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me this week is Andy Asimakis and Taylor Allen. Andy, Taylor, how are you guys?
Good. When do we stop saying next gen? What's the buffer on that?
I think.
Is it a month? Is it a year?
Q2 2021.
Q2. Is that a hard deadline?
That is in April, May.
Up until that point.
Yeah.
You can keep saying it's a next gen experience, it's next gen game, it's next gen console.
Or when they stop supporting previous gen or current gen.
See, that's a tricky question, Steve, mm-hmm. because Persona 5 came out on the PS3 mm-hmm. in 2017. So,
right, and it is not
I'm just curious. It's a fun thing to think about. Wait, like
Persona 5 came out on PS3.
Yeah, yeah. It was a cross-gen game.
Oh, they did some magic over there.
We didn't care about that because we bought it on PS4. But yeah, that was definitely a cross-gen game. That's why Royal is a bit of a. It's a nice thing to get now. It's fully for PlayStation 4.
Sure.
And also on PS5.
Taylor, how are you?
My FOMO is through the roof right now.
True.
It's going to get worse during the show, Taylor. You wait. I got some surprises in store for both of you tonight.
Oh, my Lanza.
You ain't seen Next Gen yet. You ain't seen it. I'm going to show you what it's all about. I'll teach you all what it means.
I'm ready to learn, Master. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dual Screens Crossplay, the internet's number one gaming news podcast starring people you've never heard of, probably. The show posts each and every, and now here's where it's changing. Because from now on, we're going to be recording the show on Tuesday nights live on twitch.tv/DualScreensStreams. It's going to be going up immediately after recording. I'm literally going to edit it and then put it up. So it's not going to be like a scheduled for the next morning or whatever. When it's recorded, I'm going to edit it. Boom, it's going up. No questions asked. The video on demand will then go up 24 hours later on youtube.com/DualScreensTV. This is also going to move around the Dual Screens podcast, which of course is our interview show where we bring on indie devs and other industry developers and talent. That show is going to start going up on Fridays from now on. That's going to go up on Fridays. That's going to give us basically a whole week to get our guests to record those episodes. So that's kind of the changes. Those are the changes that are going to be happening here. You're no longer going to be getting a podcast on Mondays or Tuesdays because we are going to be producing for 2021 a lot, and I mean a lot more YouTube content that is going to be in the form of YouTube exclusive shows, pundit shows, stuff like that. More list videos, more features, more reviews, video reviews, stuff like that. So please keep it tuned. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button. It would help us out tremendously. And you know what else helps us out tremendously? Our Patreon producers. That's right. Colton, the Apprentice Nestler, and FNH Paul go over to Patreon.com/NDS podcast, and they support us as a Patreon producer. But you can support us for as little as $1. And trust me, that dollar goes a long way. Because of you, Dual Screens is able to cover next gen like we've never have before. We are putting nearly every cent that we have essentially saved over the past, I want to say 14 or 15 months, because there were no events for us to cover and have to spend money on. We are now going to be fully into next gen. We are going to be covering as many games as we possibly can across every possible platform that we can afford to get our hands on. So we do appreciate that. So again, that's patreon.com/NDS podcast. Please help spread the word. It helps us out tremendously. And now let's get into the show proper. It is time. And this is a big one this week, gents. It is time for the adventures in gaming. Taylor, what have you been playing?
Yeah. So, like I said earlier, my FOMO is real right now because I don't have a next-gen system, but I have been playing some next-gen games on my personal computer. First was Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I got that right when it came out. And I must say, I'm a little bit disappointed in this game. Mm. I enjoy it. It's good, but I feel like Odyssey raised the bar on the series, and this is definitely a step back from Odyssey. The writing isn't nearly as charming. I don't find the characters as interesting. I feel like there's less diverse things going on in the world. I'm only about 16 hours into the game right now.
Oh, that's it. Just 16. Only. You can't form an opinion on that, Taylor.
Right. At all.
I mean, to be fair, the recent Assassin's Creed games have been like 80 plus hour long games. Sure. So,
no, I totally get it. It's so bizarre that that's like a thing we say now. Like, we only put in 2 full days worth of work in something.
And it might get better. I don't know yet.
It could get better.
It's only been 20 hours, but still.
Yeah. Initial impressions on the characters and stuff, though, is they are just, like, stereotypical Vikings with, like, very little character depth.
Mm.
It's just brooding, I'm gonna smash people's faces in. I do find the main character, Eivor, somewhat interesting. And I chose the female version. You can't choose male or female. Or they actually have this option where it, like, switches back and forth. Which is really bizarre. I didn't like that at all. But I chose a female, and they seem cool right now, but like I'm not sure if there's gonna be a lot of character progression there, from what I can tell.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's Assassin's Creed.
When I was watching your stream, you were saying something about that even the climbing seems to have taken a step back from what it was as well.
Well, and I think it's just, there are 2 studios that work on Assassin's Creed at Ubisoft. There's the Origins studio and the Odyssey studio. I can't remember which is located in Vancouver and which is located in Toronto, but they're both Canadian
teams. Is it one Montreal? Primarily, is one Montreal?
Or Montreal, yeah, not
or
is, Toronto.
Or does Montreal do, I don't know, whatever. They're a massive company.
It's worked on across a number of their studios, but they have like primary studios here and there. So the Origins team, which is the team that worked on Valhalla, Origins was a little bit more grounded. And I said this when I was playing Origins not too long ago, whereas in Odyssey, like very early on, they make it apparent that you are basically going to be like a god. Like,
sure, like
you
can just
jump off of, you can jump off of anything. You can climb whatever. You don't have to worry about handholds or anything like that. And this has definitely taken a step back towards the more like grounded and realistic approach. And like the mantling and stuff is more based off of like handholds and stuff like that. And so it just feels off. I don't know. It's not as smooth as just running up the side of a mountain like you could in Odyssey.
Gotcha. What else you got?
The other game that I've been playing, which if you guys follow me on Twitter would know, I made it very clear I was not going to be buying this game for the first time in 11 years. And then it came out, and 2 days later I caved. Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. I'm a weak and feeble human. What can I say? Call of Duty is like my guilty pleasure every year. I love the way the guns feel. I always like get that like urge to just like grind levels and unlock attachments and stuff like that. Like I love that gameplay loop of shooting people in the face, gaining levels. Like Call of Duty makes that progression feel really good. And this year, with the final act, I believe, of the Zombies franchise and the way that they handle XP and how it works between all of the game modes and stuff. I was very excited to jump in after seeing some people stream it. So I bought that. I've not played a ton of it, played a little bit of Zombies, a little bit of multiplayer, haven't touched the campaign at all. It's more Call of Duty. It's about all you can say about it. It's more Call of Duty. The Zombies mode is very good. Multiplayer, I will die on this hill, is absolutely ruined by skill-based matchmaking. And I think it's a horrible feature, but the guns feel great.
Why do you feel that way? Like I'm curious because for example, you and I, we play Apex Legends, which has skill-based matchmaking, mm-hmm. and in some cases it works really well where you're getting into nice competitive matches, but even competitive matches. Why is it not so in Call of Duty?
So the issue with Call of Duty is, one, it then doesn't prioritize connection and ping, and so you get a lot of people rubber banding, people kind of jumping all over the place because you're playing across multiple servers instead of just connecting to people who are closest to you. And the other issue is when you try and play with friends. Call of Duty's skill-based matchmaking is so overtuned that if you get in a lobby with someone that's even slightly better than you, or, you know, heaven forbid, is like significantly better than you, you're just going to have a terrible time. And it's the same if you have friends play with you that aren't as good as you are. You know, they're going to consistently have like a 0.5, 0.4 kill death ratio. And it's just not going to be fun because the game is so finely tuned around trying to get people to like a flatline kill death ratio and people of the exact same skill that playing with friends just isn't fun anymore. And you don't get those like diverse lobbies where sometimes you're just like stomping people and sometimes you're getting your face kicked in. It feels very much the same where you're like right around the same point all the time. And so it's hard to get that like feeling of like improvement. You never know if you're like actually getting better at the game, right? Because all of your lobbies are always full of people at your same skill level. So that kind of sucks. It's also frustrating trying to play with groups and things like that. Over time, it just like kind of wears on you. Like I was playing with one of our friends, Reaper's Past, and he is much better at Call of Duty than I am. And in his lobbies, I was just getting trashed and I was just having a terrible time. And it makes me like kind of not want to play with my friends that I know are better than me. And I'm sure people who are not as good as me feel the same way when they play with me. And so, right.
Yeah,
it just sucks. I hate it. I wish that they would separate that out into like some kind of ranked playlist or turn it down a little bit so that it's not so heavily tuned to matching people of your exact same skill level.
Gotcha. Anything else?
A lot more Apex. Apex still a very good game.
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. Andy, what you been playing, handsome?
Oh my goodness, boys. It was all about the PS5 this past week.
It has been.
Holy shnikes. Demon Souls is without a doubt the greatest launch game ever. It is it's undeniable. Not up for debate. Blue Point Games crushed it with this title.
Nice.
Would you take like the foundation of the Souls form, which was kind of clanky when it first came out on the PS3 years ago, and this is now the best of all of them, surpassing even From Software's recent games in the genre. And what makes this thing amazing is how it just sings along. Game and controller are like in sync as you play. You feel like the pull of the soul in your hands when you kill an enemy. You hear rocks in the distance falling, and you can see, like, you can sense how far they are from you, kind of by the crack in the controller with the sound they make. And it is just as hard as it was back in the day. It's brutal. It's unforgiving. But death never looked this good, guys. I'm telling you, man. It is a beautiful game. It's buttery smooth. And it's like the first must-have game, I think, for next generation. If you got a PS5, you have to buy this game. Now, played that for a long time. Loved it. Died a lot. Beat two bosses. It was amazing. I'm still hoarding souls.
As you do. As one does.
I get the build just right. I'm not sure where I'm going to go just yet.
Right.
But I took a dive into Astro's Playroom this week.
As did I.
And I made a huge miscalculation with that game. I think that Sony should have locked everyone's PS5 until they played that game first. Because that game, when you play it, it's like when you first played games as a kid, that first time, that joy you experience, that marvel of, wow, look at those things doing stuff on the TV, I'm controlling it. That same feeling is what I felt playing Astro's Playroom. Now, I think I missed the memo at some point. When did Japan Studio become better at platformers than fucking Nintendo did? This thing makes Mario 64 look like Bubsy 3D.
My, those are fighting words here.
Those are bold claims.
It is a claim, and it's legit. And again, the controller is just center stage here. When you can feel when it's raining, when it's hailing, when you're walking on glass, sand, mud, grains, rocks, you feel all of it. Thunder, wind. It's incredible. Plus, game, one last thing about this game, it is a love letter to the entire PlayStation legacy from PS1 through PS4.
Yep.
And you see, like, the craziest references. Yeah, you'll see Metal Gear, Resident Evil, Silent Hill, Ico, Shadow of the Colossus. But then you see Jumping Flash and fucking Vib Ribbon. I'm like, Vib Ribbon? What are you doing here? Parappa the Rapper. It's like, it's all there. And it's smiling ear to ear the entire... And I think Astrobot is like the mascot now for Sony.
I did not get into Little Big Planet or Sackboy's Big Adventure, whatever it's called. It's Sackboy.
Yeah.
I didn't get that. I hear amazing things about that. A lot of people are sleeping on that game, but I hear everybody that plays it is enamored with it. Mm-hmm. But with Astro, so I played that third. That was the third game that I kind of went into, and it does a very interesting thing where you could kind of just go into these different facets of the PlayStation 5, the memory,
You're in the PS5.
Yeah, you're inside the PS5. Right? Yeah.
You're inside the PS5.
So the first one I did was the one that focused on gyro controls.
Was it GPU Jungle? Fucking song that's catchy as all hell.
It's got
lyrics.
It was
the space one, yeah, with the rocket ship.
Yes, it was all about the gyro controls, basically the six axis. And I was instantly brought into a place where I wanted to smash my head on a rock because I despise doing this with a controller to move. I just hate it so very much. So after getting through that, I was miserable. I was like, I don't want to play this game anymore. But I didn't feel like I had a great experience or like the full experience. So I went in and I played the other three worlds, and it really does show you what this kind of haptic feedback can really, what it can really do, and what these triggers can really do. Pulling back a spring when you're the springy guy jumping around is incredible. It is amazing. And feeling the grass just kind of hitting the controller, like almost like you're like, I don't know, walking through like knee high grass. It's bizarre. Right. It really is a bizarre thing. Some things are a little bit of a miss. Like some things just didn't really feel like anything. But then you start skating on ice, and it feels like you're cutting something using a razor blade using a razor blade into ice. It's like
your figure skate. Like if you're actually skating on ice, that's what it would feel like.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing to really feel and do.
I have a question about this.
Sure.
Because the Switch does something similar with their haptics and stuff like that. How far do you guys think this actually goes? Like, do you think this is something that's actually going to be utilized by studios outside of Sony first party? Or is this a cool novelty at the launch of this console, and then is it going to die within a year?
There are two distinct differences, I think, between Nintendo's version and this version. Nintendo's version is only in the Joy-Con, whereas this is the whole controller. Like everywhere through it, you can actually feel something moving from one side of the controller, rumbling through, like almost like a wave kind of going through the controller to your other hand. It's very different. That's one big difference. The other one is that Sony themselves do much larger scale projects anyway. So I wouldn't be surprised if we only need Sony to do it, because Sony's games are such a bigger scale. It's not just a Mario. It's not just a party game. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not going to just be the next Zelda that uses it for like 15 minutes. It their games can really take advantage of this thing. I think what I think is really going to get pushed forward are the triggers. The adaptive triggers, I think, is going to be something that's easily implemented in pretty much every game. I'm playing a few games that implement it now. It does it really well. The game that you spoke about earlier, Call of Duty, every gun shoots differently with the triggers. Looking down the sights has more meat to it, depending on your skill set with that weapon, you know, as your character and stuff like that. Like, it might take a little longer to push down to get into a sniper scope, for example. It just has this tactile feedback. What I wonder is if people are going to bother with that on it from a competitive standpoint. It's great for immersion, but who's going to want to have differences like that that they're fighting with their controller, you know what I mean? But for single-player narrative experiences, what is what Sony is known for and what that platform is known for, I could see this being an incredible addition to the hardware, to game development in general. Anything else, Andy?
No, that's it, dude. I have a few more games I didn't touch because I was so engrossed in Astro's Playroom.
Sure.
But yeah, that was the bulk of it. I'm trying to platinum that game before the week's out, so I'm getting there.
Cool.
Slowly but surely.
So I am 51% through Miles Morales. I'm doing some side mission stuff, kind of peppering my game time throughout. I was hoping to just play two nights in a row, but it just didn't work out that way. And just beating it. But I probably sat down with maybe three good sessions, and I'm more than halfway through now. That game is fantastic. It's beautiful. It's more Spider-Man, and it plays better than the original did as far as like how it feels and everything. I like how they do side missions on that. No spoilers, but the way it's not just, you know, there are random crimes, but that's not like the focus of how you get your stuff. There's more interesting ways to do some side missions and stuff that I'm really enjoying. It looks beautiful. I'm playing it on fidelity mode. When you turn on ray tracing and do that mode, it's gorgeous. But my God, when you look at 60 buttery frames per second in action, turning motion blur off, it is chef's kiss. Astro's
really quickly on that, Steve. Mm-hmm. Just the most amazing thing about that game to me is that they animated the Into the Spider-Verse suit at 24 frames when the game runs at 60, and it just looks so perfect. In that world, like it animates exactly like the movie.
Yeah.
And I just love it so much.
And the cool thing is that's actually a power. It's not even the suit. So you could apply that ability. It just takes away like something else that you might have, like a bonus to melee damage or whatever. You could throw that mod in any of the suits and it works perfectly. It's really cool to see. It's a really cool thing to see in action, especially when the rest of the world looks a certain way and then you are doing this like kind of like stop motion stuff. Mm-hmm. It looks dope. I've also dug a little deeper into Godfall, which I see potential. I see where it's going to get its hooks in me, and I also see where it really needs to be refined. This feels like your quintessential. This would feel like the launch game we would get in the PS3, PS2, and PS4 era of game if we didn't have a Demon's Souls or a Spider-Man. This would be the flagship. This is the Rise, Son of Rome, or whatever the hell that game was. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the Summoner or Orphan. This is a very stripped down showcase of graphics and simple gameplay mechanics and simple game design that works really well, but is so incredibly shallow at first glance. There are a few things that need to be refined. The combat feels really good. Everything is weighted. It has heft behind it. All the weapons feel different. They interact with the enemies and the environment differently and your character differently. The suits, I've only gotten two so far, but they play, they move similarly, but they have special abilities that are a little different. It's got the one thing that I despise is their locking system doesn't give you enough feedback that you're locked onto something. It's a very slightly visible reticle that kind of slowly appears over the character, and you're kind of like, okay, I guess I'm locked onto this guy. It's not like it hard snaps and you're like, I'm looking at that guy. which wouldn't be a problem because we've seen a lock-on system that is essentially non-existent in Ghost of Tsushima. But in that one, you could still direct your swings where you want them to if you see that you're off from somebody. In this game, it has a almost like a first-person shooter reticle, like a little dot in the screen. And whatever that dot is pointing at is where you're going to swing. So if you're not looking at where you want to swing, you're just going to keep hitting empty space for really no reason. It reminds me of Too Human in that way, almost. But it has really good gameplay loop. It's very Souls-like in its world, how it's laid out, where you can go anywhere, unlock doors, unlock little side quests, kind of do your thing, power up, level up, grind a little bit, get loot, but it's much more Diablo-like in its quest structure. Go here, press the thing, here's your mission, do the mission, finish it, beat the boss, go to the next thing, finish the mission. And that's where the multiplayer comes in. It's not Destiny. It's not everybody drop in, go do what you want to do, meet up, and then let's queue up for a mission. No, this is, you invite your friend brings their character, that character is now in your world, go off and do some missions and play through the story, just like Diablo. You play through the acts and you unlock cool stuff. The more people that are involved, the harder it is, the better loot you get. It's as simple as that. I could see it being really good if they continue to support it and they keep adding worlds and content and maybe some random activities for you to do with your friends that aren't story based. But if you're going to get into this game, it's a light God of War combat, Diablo style, story mode and playthrough and loot drops. And it's to me, it's pretty damn good where it is, but it's definitely a launch game. So we'll see what happens with that. And also the last thing, yesterday I got the Series X. It is hooked up. I have been downloading the games that I want to play on it first, primarily Game Pass games. The setup was pretty seamless. I'm having some minor issues with some UI stuff that I need to get used to, but nothing crazy. Our friend of the show, Buzz Killington, was kind of walking me through some things yesterday, and what I was hoping would have worked yesterday actually didn't work, which was I wanted to shut off the system and let it continue to download what it was already queued to download. And all the settings say, you know, download to console with power off. I did that. We set it all up. I woke up this morning, none of the games that were downloaded. So oh, I don't know what happened. I don't know if it's just a little hiccup or if I did something wrong, but I'm going to take a look at it again. But I have not played a game on it yet. I literally got it last night at like 8 o'clock, and then I had a bunch of stuff to do. So all I did was set it up. So this weekend is going to be a Xbox Series X situation. Really quickly, let's get into the indie news update very quickly. Our review of Raji and Ancient Epic is on dualscreens.com. And we also have the video review. If you want to take a look at that, it is just under 4 minutes long. It's a short video for you. You should get in there and support it. It is a pretty damn awesome game. Thorn really loved it, really enjoyed it. Looking at it, I'm kind of pissed that I signed it to him and that I didn't do it, but it's basically Hindu God of War. So if you're interested in that, go and take that out. All right, let's get into the Dual Screens Crossplay Report. Leading us off is Taylor. What do you want to talk about?
Okay, item number one on the list. The 2020 Game Awards nominees were announced today.
Indeed.
Namely, Game of the Year, we have Animal Crossing, Doom Eternal, Final Fantasy VII, Ghost of Tsushima, Hades, and The Last of Us Part II. There is a full list breakdown on GameSpot that shows you every single category and all of the different things that were nominated. But the biggest takeaway here is, my God, did Sony have a fucking year this year? My God. They had like
a total domination of that list.
They had like 30 something nominations across all of the different categories. I think it was more than like most of the other major publishers combined. Like, they just absolutely killed it this year. So, I'm normally, like, pretty tepid on the PlayStation hype, but I mean, looking at the list and all of the nominations, I could see Sony cleaning up in a lot of these categories.
I don't think they're going to get a game of the year. I think that, surprisingly, and I know this is crazy, I think Animal Crossing is going to get that.
Nah, I don't see that happening.
I really do.
I think we'd sooner see it go to Hades than Animal Crossing, to be honest.
I agree. And Hades is my personal game of the year.
Yeah.
As well,
so I kind of want to go to Hades. I mean, Last of Us 2 seems like the obvious to me, even though I don't want to go that route.
From a technical standpoint, you're absolutely right. Last of Us 2 is just mint.
Right. Yeah. Though Ghost is kind of up there as a really strong contender compared to Last of Us. But Hades, I think, as like the underdog, the dark horse, like to see that game pull through, wow. I would love to see that happen.
I think a game like Animal Crossing, which has always been big in its circle, had famous people streaming it. Like, had celebrities setting up islands and having people visit their islands. And like it came out right during when the beginning of the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to completely stop gaming. It stopped the gaming world in its tracks for like the first 2 or 3 months it was out. And it was just like Doom what? Like, you know what I mean? Like so Doom Eternal came out. And
Doom is a weird pick, by the way, on that list.
It like, is. I kind of get is. It, but like, it is weird.
I agree.
Why are you there?
It is weird. But like, I just feel like Animal Crossing had like minor issues that people were like, oh, I wish this would happen. And then it didn't matter because they added so many cool things to it throughout the year. I just feel like if that game doesn't win it, it's definitely winning ongoing game next year for sure.
Like, oh, for sure, yeah.
The stuff they're adding to that. Speaking of, Apex is in that ongoing game category again. Fingers crossed.
As much as I would like Apex to win that, I almost guarantee that's going to Warzone. That makes me sad.
Yeah. I mean, just more on Animal Crossing. It was like the game to play this year, given mm-hmm. what was going on. But I think, as far as the other ones in the category, I don't know. It can't rise to game of the year compared to the other ones. It's not. It's just not there. Yes, it was a great game to fall back on when the world was ablaze for most of us. But game of the year, that's a title, and I wouldn't give it to Animal Crossing because of celebrities playing. Like,
that's not what I said. I said that was something that transcended hardcore gaming.
Give it to Among Us.
Game of the year
from 5 years ago. Exactly. That's why it's funny and ironic. Give it to Among Us.
The Last of Us is a game I don't want to play more than once. I played it once. I had my thing. It hit it. It made its impact. I could see its technical beauty and its masterpiece in storytelling. But same thing with Uncharted. I don't want to play those games again. I experience them. I'm done. I put it down and walk away.
But that's not a criteria for game of the year.
No, it's not.
Playability.
No, it's not. But it is a criteria for mainstream appeal is what I'm trying to say. I think mainstream appeal does have some sort of conversation when you're talking about game of the year, because it's not just game of the year as the art.
Fortnite won some years back, did it not? For similar reasons, I would imagine. It was so huge in the conversation.
That's why I'm trying to say that, when we're talking about game of the year, we're not talking about something just from an artistic perspective. We're talking from a perspective of the significance of the cultural impact that it has, the impact it has on the industry in general, not even just the social pockets. And I'm not just saying like, oh, getting on in the news is, makes you all of a sudden worthy of Game of the Year nomination. Like that's obviously not the case. But I think from a technical standpoint, the game takes a very minimalist approach and really has an incredible amount of depth there. I saw in our chat enough saying the game got boring really quick. It only got boring because it wasn't doing the things you would like to do, but it did enough to make 20 million people want to continue doing it. So it's like, it's one of those things, again, it's like No Man's Sky, No Man's Sky is not going to be a big mainstream huge name in video gaming, but that didn't necessarily take away, like, take it away from the Game of the Year conversation, but now it's in the ongoing game conversation. So I just think that, like, there's more to it than that. Ghost of Tsushima is my pick. I think Ghost of Tsushima, for me, is a better experience for a gamer than something like The Last of Us, because The Last of Us isn't for most people. Like, I don't even think most your average adult gamer isn't going to enjoy The Last of Us the way they would enjoy Ghost of Tsushima. That's just my opinion.
You want your soul to die in like 40 hours? Come play this game.
Yeah.
Steve, you want to know what game you can play over and over and over again?
I do.
Fucking Hades, dude. That game is so awesome.
And you have to play it over and over again.
That I just hope with all of my soul that Hades wins it. It is the dark horse in this race this year. And I think there is a lot of people who are going to, like, really push for Hades in especially these major outlets, like conversations, because games like Ghosts and Last of Us and Final Fantasy will kind of like split the room from the Sony people. I think Hades will pick up a lot of momentum there.
That game is like what Parasite was to the Oscars. It wasn't a huge Hollywood production with major like celebrities. It came out of nowhere and it just conquered. And I think if that game were to win, everyone would say, you know what? Yes, you really do deserve this Hades because you are fucking amazing.
100%.
And speaking about things in our souls that we feel, Demon Souls was in the news this week with some fun tidbits. So let's get the factual and down first and then the fun, crazy bit of news. So Bluepoint is known for putting fun things in their remakes. I think it was in Shadow of the Colossus, they put in these little coins. You can get it. I think you can unlock it was a sword from Ico in that game as a bonus. And it's also here again in Demon's Souls. There's a secret door that no one can unlock, apparently. Now, the story here is not the door itself or the item behind it, which folks have seen via photo mode, what lies beyond the door. Clever, clever foxes, those people, those gamers. But someone tried to glitch through the door to see what the object was. And apparently, you can't even do that. There's a layer of protection that Bluepoint put to prevent glitching into that room. So what the fuck is behind that door, guys? What is that item? I gotta know. And there was a tweet that went out today from Bluepoint that said, a symphony of rumors with a screenshot of said item behind the door. And it said, wish you were here. These motherfuckers.
This is very interesting, folks.
Are just teasing all the things. And, you know, we didn't get our 6 Archstone back, which upsetting as a Demon Souls fan. But this will do because it's a mystery and it makes the game more fresh than it already was playing it on the PS5. But there's one more bit of news for Demon's Souls this week. And it's going into the crazy tinfoil hat category, which I'm like, this is borderline hype zone. So apparently you can hear Metal Gear Rex from Metal Gear Solid roaring in the background in the main hub of the game. I listened to this. It sounds nothing like Rex. I think it's really fucking reaching, you guys. There's been rumors a long time of a Metal Gear Solid remake from some reliable sources. This feels like reaching, but I want to ask both of you guys, do you feel for their next project, should it be a remake or should they shed this remake title and go into an original IP? What do you guys think?
Listen, Bluepoint is very, very good at what they do.
Yes.
But that being said, I would love to see what they can do with an original work. They are obviously incredibly talented developers. And I think if you get the right creative minds in there, especially if, say, they get acquired by Sony and there's some, you know, shifting of creative talents there, and you get a good creative director to give them some good direction, I think they could create another absolute masterpiece like the last couple of games they've put out have been. So
I can't imagine they're not already like at least planning something like that.
Oh, for sure.
You know, they have to have like design docs for some game that they've I mean, they're creative people. They have to be, but I don't know, man. That game, seeing what they've been able to do slowly over the last like 8 years, just it's kind of unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with Taylor on this, but what they've done to games like Shadow of the Colossus and now with Demon's Souls, I feel they could give life to so many great lost franchises. Like so a Soul the Reaver.
The question is, okay. I was just going to ask, like, what would be next then? Like, because the last two games they've done have been huge IP in the, like, gaming space. You know, maybe not necessarily as widely known in pop culture and things like that, but like, you know, pretty beloved IPs. So what's next? Like, cause you know, they're wanting to like constantly challenge themselves and work on like another huge thing. I just don't know where they go from Demon's Souls, you know?
So I think I'll be a little unselfish here, even though I want like a Silent Hill remake or a Metal Gear Solid or a Symphony of the Night.
Of course you do.
I think if they were to do The Legend of Dragoon, that could really push them to their limit. That would push them because it's full on RPG. Mm-hmm. They could redo that whole combat system, and the idea of the whole Dragoon transformations, if they were to do it on PS5, holy hell. Yeah. But yeah, that could be the one to really test their potential as like the master of remakes. In a sense, that's my pick.
100%. Remake Dark Cloud, you cowards.
Oh, God.
or you know what would be an awesome remake for them now that they did Demon's Souls?
Armored Core. Bubsy 3D.
Armored Core.
Sure,
bro.
Yeah, that one too.
Armored Core, bro. Armored Core, Another Age was awesome. Love that game. I didn't know I was playing a Souls game until somebody told me later.
Oh, yeah. You definitely were.
Armored Core, like I loved Armored Core, loved it. For those who are watching live, I apologize if you are getting dropped frames. Every once in a while, I keep saying I'm dropping a frame. I don't know what's going on. I have closed off pretty much every other program that's running in the background. But anyway, I digress. It is what it is. It happens. Whatever they do next, I think is going to be huge. Speaking of huge, oh boy. So there was a ransomware leak from Capcom. They were targeted by some sort of group of people or persons, and they said, give us this amount of money, otherwise we're going to leak all of this info, and they did not give the money, and so we have info. So the first infos that we have is that Street Fighter 6 is in development, and it's going to release for PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Those were the listed consoles, which of course is notable because Sony did negotiate the exclusivity for Street Fighter 5, which pissed off a lot of people. And a lot of people blame Sony for Street Fighter 5 being shitty. What people obviously don't know is that, or not a lot of people know, is that Street Fighter 5 wouldn't have happened without Sony because Capcom was hemorrhaging money at that point. That was like when they were 10, this was 10 years ago. That was when they were just, they weren't doing well. Just put it that way. It wasn't until, not even this game, but it wasn't until Monster Hunter and all that stuff kind of came around, that they were able to really right the ship there. But it looks like it is going to be a game. It is being developed. It is an actual thing, but that's not all that came out of this. There was also a Resident Evil 8 release date shown in this dump, which looks like it's going to be coming sometime in April. Let me see. Where was it?
April 21st.
April 2021. Okay. Monster Hunter Stories 2, slated for June 2021 on Nintendo Switch. And it will also launch on PC. I wasn't sure if we knew that yet, but that was something else that was in this launch dump. Monster Hunter Rise is March 2021 launch.
Also on PC as well, correct?
Will follow its March 2021 launch on Switch with an October 2021 launch. So the saying Monster Hunter Rise will also go on the Switch. On Switch with an October 2021 launch on PC. Wait.
It was always on Switch.
Oh, okay. No, no.
The PC thing is new.
Got
PC
it. Yeah, the PC thing is new. Okay. I'm sorry. That sentence was weird. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff here. A lot of stuff to kind of unpack.
Didn't they mention also like a Resident Evil 4 VR port to Oculus also in that?
Not only that.
I saw that.
The biggest one was a Resident Evil Battle Royale.
Oh, good God.
That was probably the most surprising.
Yeah. How does that even work?
I don't know. Maybe a zombies mode like, where like, you know, like those
people. If you get bitten, the last to get bitten wins.
Yeah.
Like the zombies everywhere.
That's a thing that happens. That's a mode that Apex did it last year and Warzone did it this year. So,
someone told me that there was a Tron Bond reference in this data dump somewhere. Ooh. And I'm trying to find it. I'm like, I swear to God.
That'd be cool.
There's a legend something in here going on. I will shit all of the pants.
That would sure be cool.
That I own.
So really, really quickly, going back to the Monster Hunter stuff.
Yeah.
I am a Monster Hunter newbie, as in like most of the people in the U.S., I'm just getting into Monster Hunter with Monster Hunter World.
Mm-hmm.
Are any of these new Monster Hunter rumored games sequels to Monster Hunter World?
No.
And if not, do I give a shit about any of these?
Well, if you like the gameplay of World, I think Rise is just, it's similar and it's on the Switch, but now it's also coming to PC. So it's like, okay, should I wait for that one instead now? Do I want to go that bad? And the other one, what is it called? Stories, it's called, right, Steven?
Yes, yeah, Stories 2.
Right. That one, I'm not sure what those play like. If it's like a traditional hunting game or there's other weirdness to it.
I think it's really more sure like a mystery, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon is to Pokemon.
Right, okay. Like that kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm not a big Monster Hunter guy. I have Monster Hunter World. Now we all do with the PlayStation Plus collection for PS5. Get all up in there. I put it in my cart, Andy. So if you ever want to get back into Monster Hunter,
you know what? Iceborne's looking sexy. I think we should jump in, dude.
Just bang my knee. Oh,
let's do it.
I think we should do it. You know, we could do it. It could be a thing we do.
Yeah.
Speaking of a thing that we do or that we could do that somebody did that didn't need to be done, but it happened anyway. Taylor?
Yeah. Yeah. So remember that game that came out in September of last year from Xbox that everyone saw and went, yep, that's a game, mm-hmm. And then kind of moved on? Gears of War 5?
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding. I like the Gears franchise, and 5 was definitely a bounce back.
I like the Gears.
But out of nowhere, they just decided to add the New Day, as in WWE's The New Day, as DLC character.
Is this the hype zone we're doing right now, Taylor? I'm confused. I'm very confused.
Listen, the models look dope.
I'm sure they do.
They do look very cool. This was just more confusing than anything. Like the timing of this comes out like 15 months or so after the game came out. I don't know.
Didn't they add Batista at some point?
Like he was added,
in the game too.
Yeah,
and I think there was somebody else.
They did a whole thing with the Terminator movie. They were in there.
Something there too.
It's cool.
It's
so they've been building a little roster of like guest characters.
To go to last week's, I think it was last week's mailbag, Buzz. This is the one. This is the crossover that we all needed. It was WWE.
New Day specifically.
Meets Gears of War, Gears 5. Sorry, it's not called Gears of War anymore.
And I want to make it clear, like, I love the New Day. I think they're great. This is just such a bizarre crossover.
They just asked. They said, hey, can we be in the game? And they're like, okay. And so they took the time to model these three characters who look fantastic, by the way. These models, go look at them. They look better than any wrestling game has looked ever. If we can only get that in there. Okay, well, you know what, Andy? Before I kick it over to you, I'm going to do a little bonus story here.
Oh, I love bonus stories.
Bonus story. That's
a little DLC story.
Yes, that is WWE New Day adjacent. All Elite Wrestling, the competition to WWE that started last year with some former WWE wrestlers, backed by Tony Khan's giant monolith of pile of money that is on TNT. They just announced their games initiative. They showed that they have three games in development. They are made by the former developers of the WWE games for the last, that have been doing WWE games for the last 20 or so years. Yukes, and they announced a AEW video game. The biggest one that they announced is the one that's made by Yukes, and it is a callback to the old WWF No Mercy style wrestling game for Nintendo 64, the old WWF WrestleMania 2000, the WCW Revenge, and all that stuff. So the characters look a little bit more exaggerated, but still look really polished and good. But it looks like they're going to go back to that quasi arcadey slash sim style wrestling that people have just been dying for the better part of a couple of decades now. They also have a GM style game where you kind of draft wrestlers and you build cards and stuff like that. I don't know if it's an actual card game or what, but it is what it is. And then they have a casino game that they made. So just a little adjacent thing that there's going to be new wrestling games on the horizon. It is going to be made for next-gen consoles as well. Well, they said consoles, but we can only assume that this game is at least 2 years out. So I would assume it's going to be next-gen consoles. But I don't think they put a stamp on which consoles is coming out to yet. Speaking of PlayStation 5, Andy, hit us up with the next story.
So I'm wondering if this is where the avalanche begins or just some outliers in the bunch, but it seems like PlayStation 5 can do things graphically better than the Xbox Series X.
Interesting.
The first bit comes from Blooper Team's Observer, Redux, now on PS5 and Xbox Series X. This comes from GamesView.com. Scrolling through here. Delve into the video settings on the Xbox Series X version of Observer, and you'll find that it has a 4K toggle. Turn it on, and you'll get sharper visuals at the expense of a smoother frame rate. Mm-hmm. Imagine to our surprise, then, when we launched the PS5 version and found that it didn't have the same 4K toggle, but it does have something else, a ray tracing toggle. And we skim down. Wandering in the Xbox Series X simply has them turned on by default. We went back to check. But no, there are no ray traced reflections to be found. So it seems that, as the headline says, System Redux is simply better on PS5 than Xbox Series X. Now, okay, maybe you think it wasn't optimized well enough for Series X. What's going on there? But then today, Assassin's Creed Valhalla had a deep dive courtesy of the boys at Digital Foundry. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, it's better on the PS5 courtesy Series X. And I was told for months on end that teraflops were a thing and it was all about power. And here we see something very different where the PS5 that chose not to overtly brag and hype its console's abilities is now overperforming. And the exact quote from Digital Foundry, if I can pull it up, we noted PS5 delivering a 15% performance advantage over Microsoft's equivalent in identical scenarios. That is nuts. It seems like Mark Cerny, when he gave us his famous TED talk about the human ear, wasn't full of shit. And there's some magic in there after all. And again, I'm wondering, is this what's going to happen going forward? Is the PS5 better for third-party games? What do you guys think, based on these two stories?
Well, something that Buzz put in the chat, yeah, I would like to open up. It's a direct message with one of the Digital Foundry guys. I don't know. I'm not on a first-name basis with them. I don't really know them like that. But so this is clearly from somebody who's very upset about this. says, WTF, I don't understand why PS5 run better Call of Duty, Cold War, and AC Vent Valhalla. XSS is shit? Question mark. Response is, no, the X is a very powerful system. The issue from what we've heard is the development tools are behind. They're still in their infancy on Xbox, GDK, which is, I guess, their development toolkit. I'm sure it will improve in time. It's just an issue with early releases. I wouldn't worry. And then the response is, but I do not understand how it is possible to have AC Valhalla and COD Cold War be more beautiful on PS5 while the XSX has 12 teraflops, full RDNA 2 with DirectX 12, etc.
And all his response is, it's all that propaganda about specs, dude. That's what happens.
His response is tools. That's it. So
someone's a tool, all right.
this looks to be like something that we kind of thought might have been a possibility when they were talking about games on the Series X or S being held back to a lower common, a lesser common denominator. But we didn't think it would happen with third-party games that were also going to be on PlayStation 4. That is what's interesting. What I think is happening here, especially from what I've understood from Digital Foundry's breakdown of Devil May Cry 5 as well, is that the PlayStation scales just better. It's the technology that it's using to scale images up when it can do that, and down when it needs to keep that stable 60 frames, is just working better. For whatever reason, it's just better. That does not mean that the Series X won't. I think the Series X is trying to push a more higher fidelity image and is dipping below 60 frames in order to keep that image at where it needs to be, whereas the PlayStation is willing to lower down to a 1440p or just under 4K to kind of keep that 60 frames, but it's so minute and not noticeable with the resolution. But the problem is that the Series S, from what I can ascertain from their videos, is that the Series S goes as far down as 900p to keep 30 frames, not even 60 frames. So it's just we're in a new world, man. We're in a new world where these consoles are doing a lot more work than just making games look good. Like they're figuring out ways to take any game that's made in any resolution and scale it up or down to make things work or not work. It's such a weird world that we're living in. Taylor, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I don't think this is going to be an issue in 2-3 years. I think we'll find a handful of cases now of early, like, cross-gen, cross-platform games. But overall, like, the specs of the Series X, like, are pretty undeniable. I do think the Series S has the potential to continue to hold it back. And that makes me a little bit nervous because it's already struggling to kind of meet that promise of, you know, 1080 or 1440, 60 frames per second. If we're just looking at the flagship rectangle, then I would say the Series X is going to be just fine in a couple of years.
Yeah. This reminds me a lot of the early PlayStation 3 360 talk, where the sports games and the Call of Duties and everything would always be, oh, this is way better on 360. And then 3 years later, it was parody, and then Sony kind of started doing their first-party stuff, knocking it out of the park. But then by then, you would be like, see, I told you, the games, you know, it was just because the cell processor was so different. But then by then, they were like, yeah, but all my friends are now on Xbox. So I'm not moving. Right. I'm not buying Madden on PlayStation because I'm playing that on Xbox with my friends. And I think that might be something that happens now. Go ahead, Andy.
More of a reminder that it's not all about what's just on paper for these systems as well. Like, you know, many thought, again, that one person being so like, how is this happening? Like, because you were told for months that it was the most powerful console ever. Why is it now, quote unquote, not up to par? You know, it's not always about the specs. I mean, yes, they're great specs. It'll do great things. But yeah, at least for now, it seems like PS5 is performing more than we thought it would.
Yeah, it's surprising some people, but yeah. let's not mince words here. PlayStation 5 is having a lot of hardware problems. There are a lot of issues with PlayStation 4 versions of games getting downloaded and the game and the system defaulting to those instead of the PlayStation 5 versions.
I had to convince Ken. I was like, listen, put the PS4 down, get the PS5 now, play Valhalla on that. I installed it first, PS5, put the disc in, and then PS4 was like, why are you downloading that? No one asked you to do that, PlayStation. Yeah. Stop it. That's like the 40 gigs of my memory. I don't have a lot of it to begin with.
Right. Yeah, it's a major issue. Now, one of the issues that people are ascertaining here is that specifically for like Call of Duty, there's an install all option. So like when you go in, and that includes all the add-ons and like all of that stuff, especially for like Warzone and whatnot. And you know, you could piecemeal your download for Call of Duty. You could download just the multiplayer or just the single player. So like people are hitting that download all, but now with this cross-gen situation, that is also downloading the previous version of everything. And I just think that it's just kind of defaulting that to the top. You can change that. That's the beauty of smart delivery with Xbox, right? You always know which version of the game you're getting because it's always going to put the best version of the game on that system, which is just a weird thing that PlayStation's not doing. This is also an issue with disc-based games because if you have a PlayStation 4 disc-based game, for some reason, every time you put it in, it wants to play the PS4 version, even though it's supposed to have a free upgrade to the PS5 version. It's just a weird thing that they absolutely need to figure out. Mm-hmm. The other thing they need to figure out is their external storage situation. Because external storage plugged into the system is crashing systems and corrupting hard drives. It's making people have to re-download games over and over again. It's hard resetting systems. There's definitely some bugs and some issues that they need to address. And they already have. I can tell you one thing. I have not had my PlayStation crash. Period. It has not crashed yet.
Can I say one thing, Steven? I feel like we're so lucky. Like, I read about lemons in the Xbox aisle and in the Sony aisle.
Yeah, I have a friend whose Xbox doesn't turn on right now.
I just thank our lucky stars. Like, never in my life did I get a bad launch console, and the trend continues, and I feel so blessed.
Yeah, my brother, who paid $600 for his PlayStation 2, got a lemon.
Oh, my God.
He got a bad Blu-ray drive.
Oof.
Not Blu-ray, a DVD drive.
A DVD drive.
My launch PS3 still works. what else? There was a couple. And he also got two Red Rings system. Actually, no.
Well, that was more than just lemons. That was an epidemic of the 360.
He had the three red lights one, where the three red lights on the front. But he also had the one that burned the fucking ring in the
CD. That wasn't like some vape smoke shit. That was
But I have both of them standing next to each other. They're both beautiful machines. They both are delivering on the promises that they
made. They are. They are.
I can't wait to get into a little bit more Xbox. I think Xbox is going to be like my Call of Duty machine, my Destiny 2, because Destiny 2 and everything from Destiny 2 is on Game Pass. So I think that might be where I kind of play Destiny. We'll see. Well, if it means I don't have to invest another $100 to play a game, like, I'm totally down with that. Plus, it's going to help with our coverage next year. One of the other things is that I noticed that the PS5 does is when you're switching games, it doesn't warn you that it's closing the other game anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think that might be that they might have some sort of instant switching thing in the works?
See, that was my thought.
A dumb thing to omit, right?
It feels like that was my thought, but the activity cards is where that goes into play a little bit, because what it was I'd start up the game. Okay, load your save game. Where am I? What am I doing? Objectives here. Follow the map marker. Cool. Now it's like, turn on PS5. What do I want to do? Is what's happening on my screen. Do I want to do this? That's almost done. Let's take all this activity. This one's like halfway done. I'll do that one later. So, and the hints, loving those too, by the way.
I have
not Googled anything yet. Dude, it's so cool. You just pop it open. watch the little video. It's the coolest shit. So yeah, it's a different mentality. It's either the old way, you boot up a game. What the fuck? What was I doing when I stopped playing this a day ago or last week? Right. Now it's like you boot it up. Okay, here are the options. What do you want to do, kind sir, today in this game? So it's a different way of thinking. I think what you were saying makes sense. Like, why not warn us if you're not going to offer a quick resume at some point in the near future? But at this point, I'm not begging for it. It'd be nice, but I'm okay without it for the time being.
Yeah.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about. I have a computer.
Yeah.
I'm sad.
Does a computer run two games at once? Is that a possibility?
Dude, I can run four games at once.
Wow. The power of the PC, bro. The power of the PC.
But can you turn it off and then turn it back on and you're in the same exact spot? That's the Xbox magic.
That's the Xbox magic.
I have something called Hibernate mode. I've never used it before, but it's there. So.
All right.
It's down too complicated.
Here's my final story here. Well, technically it's like my fifth story.
Sure. But we'll get some bonus ones today.
We got some Japanese first week sales bulletin.
Oh my god.
For next gen consoles. The PS5 sold 108. Yep.
Steven, let's preface this.
Yes.
Did you know that the Xbox Series X and S
sold
out of their pre-orders in Japan?
Yes.
So I was told huge numbers, given Phil's focus on Japan.
Yes. They focused on Japan. Give me those huge numbers, Steven.
How did they do?
PlayStation 5, 118,000 units in 4 days. Xbox Series X and S, 21,000 units in 6 days. Some things never change.
Sounds like a regular week.
The reason why I put this on here is not to make fun of Xbox. We know Xbox struggles in Japan. That's not what this is about. We know that's PlayStation's home turf. We know that. The reason why I put this on here is because it was clear that Microsoft was trying to crack Japan. Visiting there multiple times, rumors about buying a Japanese studio, trying to cater to more Japanese audiences with the Yakuza deal and like all of that stuff. What is going on? Why can't they just get in that market?
Have you been to Japan? If you go to Japan, I've been there like three times my whole life. Any electronics store in Akihabara, it's like a shelf of Xbox. They don't care about it over there. They don't want it. They don't want to look at it.
But they made the Series S. It's a chibi machine. It's a little baby machine.
They don't care for it, dude.
The Japanese love the little things.
Sure, they do.
They don't want this giant PlayStation 5 in their rooms.
Can it go in your back pocket?
Really quickly, I think we're kind of missing the forest through the trees here. Mm-hmm. The Xbox One across all SKUs, so launch, Xbox One S, Xbox One X, only sold 140,000 units in Japan across its entire lifetime.
Yeah.
So 21,000 units, even though significantly less than the PS5, is honestly a huge win for Microsoft.
Right, but
like, that's 21,000 units in 6 days is massive.
That's also, Taylor, on level with their Xbox One launch sales in Japan, which were also sold out. So... again, it's always the strong start, and then you sell like five a week
or a month. That's not an exaggeration. Like we've seen reports where 13 consoles were sold in a month. Like it's a thing that happens over there. Go ahead, Andy.
I want to add one important factor here. So this whole thing about Microsoft buying a Japan studio, like a Sega, to get a Japanese foothold into their gaming market.
Yeah,
that's the rumor, right?
I don't know if that's the reason.
Well, listen, that's the thinking. They need that to crack that market. Let's buy a Sega. They need a Japanese developer to make it big in Japan. That's the most obvious thinking people have.
I feel like that's the most shallow way of thinking about it, but yes.
Right. But that's the general consensus. If they do this, they might have success in Japan. Ghost of Tsushima. Western developer, Western game, huge in Japan. You don't need that for success. Just have a great game that they would like in that market, in that audience.
Mm. I wonder how the third-party games like Assassin's Creed, Tomb Raider, and like, you know, Fallout and all that stuff. I wonder how they do in Japan.
It varies. I know like God of War, well, third-party you're saying. Red Dead was huge in Japan. Red Dead 2? That sold a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I wonder. Because Microsoft and Xbox, they can make good, but, you know, they have in a few years, but they can make those types of games. Like, maybe Japan doesn't like games of service. Okay, maybe not. But, like...
You're also missing one key factor as well.
Indeed.
Xbox doesn't get a lot of third-party games in Japan. They're published by Sony or other company. Like, Red Dead 2, not on Xbox in Japan.
Interesting. Or, okay.
Or Monster Hunter World, not on Xbox. They're only on PlayStation in Japan.
That's interesting. See, I didn't know that. I did not know that. That's definitely got to have...
It's a factor.
Who would buy an... like if huge you, factor. And I'm not saying this as like an insult again, but who would buy an Xbox? Like if you couldn't...
If you're in Japan, yeah.
Yeah, if you couldn't... If you were in Japan, like why... I guess that does make sense. But at the same time, like... I'm sure Halo has its audience, you know, and PC gaming is not as big, I don't think, in Japan as it is in the UK and in the States, as far as what I can tell. I think it's all about the handheld, actually, you know, train gaming.
Yeah.
It's just I feel like they have a lot more work to do, and maybe that's part of their strategy. Maybe they should be paying for publishing those third-party games more in for the Japanese audience and say, no, we're going to have it too. This time we're in on this, and it's going to be the best way to play, and it's going to be on Game Pass and yada yada, you know. All right, Andy, I want you to take us into the hype zone.
Oh my god. This is kind of funny. Metal Gear Solid Phantom Pain was known for a lot of things. It's ass story for one, but the bionic arm was the other. And it is now a reality. Open Bionics and Konami, this is from IGN, by the way, have helped create a bionic arm based on Venom Snake's arm from Metal Gear Solid 5. This dude has a legit fucking...
It's an arm, dude.
It's super cool. It's super cool.
Oh, where's the machete? I don't want to chop my arm off. I want one of these things.
It looks huge. It looks like bigger than a person's arm for some reason.
But now the question is, does it have a rocket firing off capabilities?
Can it hide in a box?
Can I control it via remote control?
Can you electrocute people with it?
And it only costs about £600. So there's that.
$1,200.
Yeah.
It's a heavy arm.
Right.
600. It's three PS3s. PS5s.
But guys, as amazing as that is, I'm gonna use my arm to reach over here.
Oh.
And go into the real hype zone for tonight.
Oh, we have a sneaky hype zone, folks. Sneaky hype zone. Hype zone.
Mystery hype zone.
I promised you next gen. And here it is.
You got Stadium. It. There it is, ladies and gentlemen.
I got it for free.
Yes, the YouTuber Google
is giving them away to people. Now, my first thought was, for free, I should be paid to have this in my house. I don't want this in here. But then again, here it is. So, listen, out there, listeners, if you have a YouTube premium account, check your emails because you're going to get a free Stadia. And not only that, all the people in your YouTube premium family are also getting one, which is nuts. It's $100 value. And I have like five coming my way.
Awesome.
So I will try this at some point later on in the evening, maybe. It looks nice. It's all packaged up. But that right there is the true.
It's next gen.
Next gen experience.
Let's kick it to the chat for some questions, comments, concerns, all that fun stuff. But before we do that, we're going to go into our Facebook question/topic of the week. This one was all about console launches, folks. Console launches. We only got a couple of responses, but the question was, share with us your favorite console launch memories. And we had Buzz said, my two favorites would be the most recent ones. My getting the Xbox One on launch day after waiting outside the store for 12 hours because he didn't have a pre-order. Oh, man.
Wow.
Oh, man. And the second would be getting the Switch at midnight because my good buddy Steven, which led then to starting all of this madness we partake in, which is 100% accurate. I was on Facebook. This is a true story. I typed in Facebook, should I go to Best Buy and try and get a Switch on Switch? It was like 9 o'clock the day the Switch came out, or maybe like 8 o'clock. I didn't have a pre-order. Mr. Buzz said, I'm over here already. I'm online. The line's not long, whatever. You should come. They're giving out the whatever. So I got in my car and I went over there. I got a ticket, whatever. I think I was like number 73 or something like that. And Zach, I had not seen since high school at that point. And so we were just kind of talking. And the Switch is the reason why Andy and I started a Nintendo podcast just a couple of weeks after that, I want to say.
Correct.
And that's kind of what started this whole nonsense that we do. So that was also one of my favorite experiences. I picked up PlayStation 3 at midnight, which was really cool. And that was in Manhattan, but there were only 14 people that picked up. I was number 11 of four, or 10 of 14. My wife picked up PlayStation 4 for me, and I will never let it let her live it down that she opened it for me and set it up. And I was very upset about that. You don't open another man's console, Taylor. You don't do it.
Nope. It's just don't touch it. Enough.
You leave it. You let me open it. You let me smell the plastic. I didn't even get to smell the plastic, you guys. I didn't get to peel that little thing off that you get to do.
I was very upset about it. Oh, my God.
Mikey Kirsch says, never really had a console launch experience. I've always got my consoles a few years after release. I'll get PS5 within the first month or two of launch, and I'm just excited to be a part of the conversation and share the hype with everyone. Anybody in the chat have any experiences? Type them up now. Taylor, do you have any console launch experiences?
No, actually, I've never gotten a console at launch. So, I have one with the Switch in particular, kind of a launch story. I imported my Switch from Spain because they were sold out everywhere and I could not get a pre-order. So I got it about a month after it released. And I bought Zelda on release day, knowing full well I was going to do everything I could to get a Switch. I imported it from Spain, didn't realize they have different power outlets there in Spain. No. So I had to go and buy a separate power cord, and I was a little peeved about that. But the euro conversion rate is very good, so I ended up getting it for $306, including tax and import. So
nice.
I was not too upset about that.
Very nice. Andy?
Yeah, I've never done the whole waiting in line thing ever. My PSP I got days before it launched. I worked at a cell phone store that sold video games too. And I got it like a day or two early. And I was like, yay, I have this for all the other plebs have it in the world. But never did a line thing. I got a lot of my systems growing up either as Christmas gifts or, yeah, PS1 as a gift, PS2, N64, Wii, Dreamcast. I only paid for consoles recently, I want to say, in my adult life. I think the Switch may have been the first gaming console I paid for.
Wow.
With my own money. The PS4 was a Taco Bell FedEx delivery mishap thing that I sort of finagled illegally for myself.
Oh boy.
It was like I worked at a big office, like, oh, the PS4 get here? I was like, it's that box over there. I'm gonna throw in the corner. Nah, it didn't come yet. Call Taco Bell. They'll send another one. Lickety split. And then the second it got there, I was like, all right, I'm in the clear. PS4, you're gonna come on with me. PS3 was a gift from my sister. So it was a 360. The Wii was a gift from my friend who worked at Nintendo when they launched. PS1 was my brother. Yeah. The first was a Switch that I bought with my own hardening cash. Well, I bought three, then I sold two on eBay. So it was kind of free at the end of the day, with the profits and, you know, all
profit. You're
one all figured out.
Buzz has submitted a story here to cover before we leave. Star Wars Squadrons is getting a new map and more ships. Very good for them. They're getting it. This is the first bit of DLC for November 25th. It's a new, much requested Fostar Haven map from the main campaign, where players will duke it out on the battlefield. Out bathed in the twilight of twin stars, will also be accompanied by four new component types: booster extension kits, ion rockets, prototype piercing torpedoes, and anti-material rocket turrets. There's going to be some more game balances. The B-Wing bomber and the TIE Defender fighter are going to be added as well. So a couple of new ships as well.
Can we say one last thing?
That game looks dope.
Can we say congrats to Alana Pierce for joining Sony Santa Monica Studios recently?
Yes, Alana.
Didn't she just start a podcast about Xbox?
She was one of the hosts for the X-Cast, Kind of Funny's X-Cast, right, with Snow right. White Mike, friend and former guest of the show.
Yes, friend of the show.
Yes, and Gary Whitta, who's also on there. I don't know if she's going to continue doing it. I'm sure maybe she can. I don't know.
She is not. She's not. She announced in her YouTube video.
They need somebody. I'm in. Xbox fanboy number one is in. Get me in there, Snowbike Mike. Yeah, I got you, bro.
I was going to Xbox Series X. It's me.
I was going to say, just call Buzz Killington. Xbox fanboy number one.
Let's do it, guys. Let's do it. All right. What else we got? I guess that's the end. I guess that's we don't have any mailbag. Do we have a mailbag? Is there anything in the mailbag, Andy?
I did not see. I think
the mailbag is
The mailbag is empty this week.
Very empty this week. It's a little launch craze.
The chat has nothing to say as well. So let's just get the hell out of here. It was a nice show. Yeah. Folks, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at @duel_screens. I'm at @batchild27. Andy's at Pants Guy. And Taylor is at It's Purger. Go follow Taylor on his Twitch channel, twitch.tv/itsperger. Go follow me as well, twitch.tv/batchild. Go to our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/DS podcasts, which I will be posting the question of the week very shortly. So go over there and do that. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit us with a subscription. We would love you very, 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 very much. And if you want to watch the show live, go to twitch.tv/dualscreensstreams. Thank you, Zazu Pitts of Sarado Productions, for our theme song. Thank you, Matt Murray, for our new logo and overlay. Thank you, Buzz Killington, for your input into the logo as well. Thank you for that. Thank you, Andrew Douglas, for all the cartoon art, which we need to get new cartoon characters made, Andy. Post haste.
I know.
The team is growing, sir.
It is at a rapid rate.
It is. Remember, if you want to support us on Patreon, go to patreon.com/NDS podcast. That is going to do it for us. Andy?
Yes.
Before we go, do you want to tell the kids anything? You have a mystery show going up.
I'm going to go. Oh, yeah. First of all, Stadia is happening, and there's a Phoenix demo, I think, is free with this thing. I can play that. Exclusive. So we have an interview going up tomorrow with Star World Studios, I think the name. I forgot. It was an early morning interview for me. But we're talking about The Invincible. It's a next-gen only game for PS5 and Series X and PC.
Nice.
It's based on a science fiction story about an alien planet and biomechanical life forms. Like, it's some crazy shit. Fun conversation, slight language barrier. I burp on the podcast. It's a lot of fun. So please to enjoy that tomorrow morning.
Taylor, what do you got going on in your life?
Waiting for this baby to come. But the thing that I do want to say, make sure, I know Steve has already said this a couple times, make sure you guys are keeping an eye on the YouTube channel. There are some shows that we are going to be piloting within the next month or so, going full release in 2021, that I am very excited about, and we're going to be putting a lot of work into. And I'm just super proud of the videos we've been putting out lately. So definitely keep an eye on the YouTube, subscribe, share it with your friends, stuff like that.
Thank you kindly. That is going to do it for us. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Taylor. Thank you, chat. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, viewers. Thank you. Just thank you. We love you. And tomorrow is my birthday.
It's and very, as very always, soon, Steven. Oh my God.
Please be excellent to each other.
I got you a Stadia.
Oh, dang.